Good evening and welcome to the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, September 20th, 2023. We'll bring the meeting to order. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven members of the Town Council this evening. We'll begin this evening. If you'd stand with us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Stormwater Utility Commission will hold their next meeting on September 21st at 4 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the September 26th Board of Adjustment meeting has been canceled. The Historic Preservation Commission will meet next on October 2nd at 5 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then the Planning and Zoning Commission will hold their next meeting on October 3rd at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers as well. And then the next town council meeting is a regular session and study session, and that will be on October 4th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Jones-Ivy will recognize this evening Camden Wilson, is a fifth grader at Wilson K-8, and we're happy to have Camden and her family here with us this evening.
And it is working. It is truly a great honor and a privilege for us to present to you this young woman, Camden Wilson. Camden is a fifth grader at Wilson K-8. For being such a young person, Camden has already left a lasting impression on her Wilson community by always being someone both staff and students can count on. She's a hard worker who enjoys reading, art, music, and sports. As a model student, she goes above and beyond looking out for others and being inclusive with all of her classmates. She volunteers every morning to help set up the preschool classroom, and after school, she's a buddy to the preschoolers. Her playful nature and kind spirit are magnetic, and the preschool students love to engage and play with her. Camden is in her third year of participating in the school choir and loves singing. She also has a love for Korean pop music, which has led Camden to begin teaching herself how to read and write and speak Korean. That's incredible. Camden's two biggest loves are playing basketball and volleyball. She currently plays for the 12U? 12U Oral Valley Basketball Academy and the 5th, 6th grade co-ed basketball club team called the Avengers. This past summer, she played on the Northwest YMCA 5th, 6th grade volleyball team. And if that was not enough to fill my life and a young person's month, and I'm not doing this verbatim, so excuse me. She also finds time to volunteer at her twins' basketball practices and in the snack bar during softball season. Where's your twin?
Two, right there.
Oh, the twin sisters. Okay. Camden, we're so honored to recognize you this evening as our spotlight on youth, and believe me, we cannot wait to see what your future holds. Congratulations, sweetie.
Thank you.
Councilmember John Zivey, I was going to suggest that you give the mic to Camden so we could hear some Korean this evening. All right. Do we have other council reports this evening? Pardon? Okay. Councilmember John Zivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We now have a working schedule for CDO Project Grad. The second and the fourth Saturdays of September, October, January are going to be standard volunteer days. You can go over to the campus. They are desperately looking for volunteers. And again, I appeal to you because these are our young people and this community, and they need our support. So I'm encouraging to show up and show out for them Saturday, this Saturday, September 23rd, from 9 to 12, the T Building basement. And please wear paint clothes. CDO Project Grad is also having a whodunit. Who killed Tim Burton? Was it you? Who did it, with what, and where? That's going to be Friday, October 13th. Please mark your calendars. The tickets are available online. And if you'd like to become one of the characters, you can also purchase a ticket to participate in that. You must be 21 to attend. Please go to their website, which is cdo.pg.clue@gmail.com, and please attend. They have a financial goal of $9,500 that will go towards funding Project Grad. Also save the date, Friday, February 2nd of 2024. Project Grad is presenting the Oral Valley Cup, which is going to be a golf game. And anything that we can do, volunteer, you can attend a fundraiser. Let's show our young people that we care about them and we want them to always participate in a safe and sane manner. So please, I beg you, as I said last time, you're going to see Project Grad in blaze. Every time you look at me, just say, "See Project Grad. Needs volunteers." Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones Ivy. I wanted to share with you that my wife and I, a week ago Monday, attended the Van Gogh immersive experience at the Marketplace. And it is an incredible experience. We thoroughly enjoyed it. Admittedly, I'd love to see that parking lot full. And not only can you enjoy the Van Gogh immersive experience, but you can also dine at Charred Pie or Tuck Tuck Thai, The Keg, Olive Garden. You got lots of choices, Red Lobster, Peach Wave. You can really make a nice evening or afternoon of it, but highly recommend it. We also, Marianne and I, were at Steam Pump Ranch at the Farmer's Market a week ago Saturday, stopped by the Historical Society, Oral Valley Historical Society booth, and I didn't realize that this was in print and on sale, but it's Oral Valley, the first 50 years. Jim, James Williams, who's a resident of Sun City of Oro Valley, is the author. I'm not quite halfway through it, but have thoroughly enjoyed what I've read, and so I highly recommend it. It's a great read, and it's fun that a local resident is the author. So we'll now turn time to our town manager for his report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple quick items. One, I'd like to congratulate our Parks Department. As you know, they received a $1 million grant from Arizona State Parks and Land Conservation Fund. This is for the Naraha steam, the pump track and skate track. So congratulations, and definitely well-deserved. Number two, I also like to congratulate our community and economic development group, especially the planning group. They had received an award for their planning engagement plan, their community engagement plan for the upcoming general plan. That was through the Arizona chapter of American Planning Associations. So as you know, they put together a process that involved, of course, the community engagement plan is required by statute, but the process that they put together is above and beyond that. So including the survey, the advisory committee that was put together. And so that was all well recognized, and I'd like to give them kudos. And of course, we're starting into that process. So if you're interested in being part of that process, please do. We'd appreciate your participation.
Nice job. We'll go to the agenda will remain as posted. Next item on the agenda is call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. When you come forward this evening for call to audience, if you would please state your name and whether or not you're a resident of Oro Valley. Tom Somerville.
My name's Tom Somerville. I reside in the town of Marana. Mr. Mayor, Mrs. Vice Mayor, ladies and gentlemen of the council, citizens of Oro Valley. The Boys in Blue Law Enforcement Motorcycle Club is comprised of active and retired federal, state, and local law enforcement officers from around the country, all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast. We all now reside in the greater Tucson area, and I have two members here with me from Oro Valley, Terry Darby and John Jimenez. We have one that lives in Maricopa, one in Tombstone, several in Tucson area. We also have two retired police chiefs. Chief Ruben Nunez, who just retired from the town of Marana, is one of our members, as is Jim Brown, who retired as a chief in Ohio. Although we love to ride our motorcycles in this beautiful state, our main goal is to provide assistance for the families of those first responders killed or severely injured in the line of duty. Aside of financial assistance, we will assist them in any of their needs. We are a 501c3 organization, and we look for donations so we can turn that around and give it to the families when needed. We're also active in our communities as well. Randy Herberholtz, also known as Chopper, was a retired U.S. Border Patrol helicopter pilot assigned to the Tucson sector. He was one of our members and a resident of Oro Valley. He loved Oro Valley and its people. Earlier this spring, Chopper asked the Boys in Blue Law Enforcement Motorcycle Club if we'd be willing to adopt a road in Oro Valley and commit to doing a biannual road cleanup. Imagine that, a bunch of cops wearing orange vests picking up trash alongside the road. Of course we'll do it. So the town of Oro Valley installed a sign on eastbound Moore Road at La Cholla that simply states Boys in Blue LEMC. We cleaned the south side of the road from La Cholla to La Cañada. Tragically, on June 13th of this year, Randy was killed while riding his motorcycle in Washington State. He drove into a pile of large debris, avoided the road debris, swerved, went off the road, and was killed. He had just turned 66 years old. Graciously, we asked the town of Oro Valley if they would place a sign below the current sign to honor Randy. And the town of Oro Valley complied and placed a sign that says, "In memory of Randy Herberholtz, EOW, which stands for End of Watch, 6/13/23. Randy's wife, Patrice, will be returning from Idaho next month to stay here in her home in Oro Valley. She loves it and plans to retire and stay here forever. We are here tonight to thank you and the citizens of Oro Valley for honoring our fallen member, Randy Herberholtz, with the sign. So from the bottom of our hearts, thank you very much. Next month, on Monday, October 9th, starting at 10:30 a.m., the Boys in Blue Law Enforcement Motorcycle Club will be back picking up trash, litter, and whatever else on our assigned road. We will continue to do this semi-annually. It's what we do, and it's what Chopper would have wanted. So thank you very much for what you did for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom, and our condolences to the loss of your colleague and resident of Oro Valley. Thank you. Anthony Ferrara.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council Members. My name is Anthony Ferrara, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. When it comes before you, I encourage you to vote no on the rezoning request proposed by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. The proposed project is not compatible with the neighborhood. They purchased a residential piece of property, and it should remain zoned as residential. If they haven't done so already, I encourage them to explore other, more appropriate properties that are not zoned for residential use. The project, as proposed, will do permanent and irreparable harm to the neighborhood. I encourage you to vote no when it comes before you. Thank you.
Sheila Lepley.
My name is Sheila Lepley, and hello. I am not a resident of Oro Valley, but my street borders Oro Valley, and I've lived here for over 55 years. So I am not in favor of the sports complex that the church wants to build. Noise, traffic accidents, and potential flooding are some of the things I have mentioned in the past. To this list, I must now sadly add vandalism. Windows are being broken, signs stolen, and in my case, ripped off the post. So what's next? The neighborhood does not want the sports complex. You've heard this from dozens of my neighbors. How long do we have to keep telling you people no, no, no? All of these meetings are a waste of time, money, and energy, both yours and mine. And ours, the neighborhood. So let this end with the church being told, please, a resounding no. I don't want this to get ugly, but it is getting ugly, and I'm hearing about it, and I've never heard things like I'm hearing now about broken glass and windows and stuff like that. So anyhow, thank you. Bye.
Karen Steinbrunn.
My name is Karen Steinbrunn. I'm a resident of Oro Valley, and I own two properties in Oro Valley. Good evening, Mayor, Vice Mayor, and Town Council members. I'm speaking in opposition to the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene proposal to rezone our 144 property for their planned area development sports complex. Just what is our 144 zoning? I live in a 144 property. According to the Oro Valley Zoning Code, it's intended to promote and preserve suburban, rural, single-family residential development. Large lot size permits agricultural uses and promotes open space. That's what we believe in, and that's what we are working to maintain. The P&Z Commission got it right in February when they recommended a denial of the rezoning of this R-144 property to a PAD based on the finding that is incompatible with the current general plan and the land area designation. And we need to keep that in mind because that's very true. My property faces Calle El Milagro, but the rear property line is only 650 feet from Buena Vista, across the street from the proposed Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene parking area. We will be negatively affected by this rezone if it's approved. My daughter grows veggies there. She has two horses there, and we appreciate our agricultural open space. We met with Vice Mayor Barrett last winter to explain how important the equestrian activities are in this neighborhood. We not only have equestrian boarding facilities, we have training, we have teaching young kids, we have 4-H clubs, and we have 3 very close proximity boarding facilities that will all be negatively affected by this. Our agricultural residential open space is threatened by this proposal, this proposed commercial sports park. Our culture has always been to protect endangered species. Let us protect this endangered neighborhood and require the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene to locate their sports complex in a suitable area. Thank you.
Joanne Michelson.
Good evening. My name is Joanne Michelson. I am a resident of the town of Oro Valley. I'm on Calle Buena Vista. I have spoke with you before. I do realize that you're waiting for another application to come in from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. It's going to happen. We just don't know when. But this is to represent to you that as the neighborhoods that live around this, we live with this concern and fear every day. The vandalism is very concerning. My sign was stolen from my property at the roundabout, which means they came onto my property to take it off. And through the course of the rest of the week, I found out others were being taken too. If a pink sign scares them, imagine how we feel 24/7 that people can drive by our house all the time. It's concerning. We're not going on their property and taking down their wish and wants to have this sports complex. Everybody's affected in a different way in this neighborhood. I did bring a new person to the meeting. My neighbor, he's lived there since he was in high school at CDO in 1974. He graduated. His parents owned the original house. He's living in it now. He knows the history of this neighborhood. He wants to protect it as well. For me, it is traffic nonstop being at the roundabout in Calle Buena Vista. And it is concerning that they are now turning to vandalism. Who knows who it is, but we haven't had vandalism in our neighborhood until this opposition came. So I appreciate the police officers that take our call to take the reports. But now that school's back in and the activities at the park have increased, we have more aquatic events, we have more high school football games, our traffic has increased already. Imagine that with the sports complex at the church. It's concerning. So I request that when that application does come back in your hands, that you vote no. Thank you.
David Rishore.
Good evening, folks. My name's David Rishore, and my family and I are residents of the town of Oro Valley for 25 years now. The quality of residential life has always been good, but now there are those that are here wanting to make change to this and to make it worse. I'm an Arizona State licensed commercial and residential contractor for many decades, watching land go from zoning to construction to certificate of occupancy. Never in my career have I viewed a more inappropriate rezone request as what is being submitted by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. Some time back, as I attended a town meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission, I watched the church's executive pastor stand at this lectern, preaching about all the good things his church does for the community to support the rezone cause. However, no one questions this, as one knows virtually all churches attempt to do good things, and hats off to them for it. What he does not understand is these good things have absolutely nothing to do with property rezoning. If a rezone is inappropriate, it's simply that, and one's good gestures, again, has nothing to do with it. It was clearly a spin that gets the commission's eye off the ball. As a former member of the Push Ridge Christian Church, one of the reasons this church sold the property was due to the zoning. With a handful of folks from the immediate neighborhoods attending this church, we knew full well that attempting to rezone this land would not be an option, and we certainly were not going to try to shove a bad rezone down the throats of good neighbors as the OVCN is trying to do now. Yes, we believed in the biblical rule, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. From 1961, my parents are charter members of a Tucson Eastside Christian church. When I graduated Sunday school, kindergarten, and baptized, I was given a Holy Bible that lives by my nightstand to this day. With all my mind and soul, I believe in the Trinity and words of this Bible and try my best to be as he would have me. As a Christian, I find it shocking that the leaders of the OVCN choose to blatantly hurt their neighbors, and it is also quite shocking that it appears no church member has stood up and cried about this wrongdoing. This has gone on far too long now. Help put an end to the year-in and year-out suffering this church causes the surrounding neighborhoods. The facts of the matter are clear, the negative impact is clear, and most importantly, the Zoning Commission agrees. Please deny this rezone and protect the citizens of this historic and unique Southern Arizona residential neighborhoods. Thank you for your time and service to the community.
Tim Fagan.
Members of the council, my name is Tim Fagan. You probably know that by now, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. My wife and I built our house at 9510 Calle Buena Vista 32 years ago. Linda Vista Citrus Tracts was established in 1937, 86 years ago, and 10 years before I was born, and probably before all of you. It's a historic area, zone R144, one house, no more than one house per 3.3 acres, and for farms and ranches. We had horses on our property until the fourth generation that I had owned died. At my age, I decided not to start anew. After 86 years, Linda Vista Citrus Tracts should remain unchanged. My children played youth sports here. We're in favor of youth sports, including church-sponsored youth sports, but the proposed rezoning is not right for this neighborhood. There is appropriate land available in Oro Valley, and OVCN should purchase appropriate land for their youth sports program. My wife and I are totally opposed to the rezoning. Thank you for your time.
I have no other blue cards, so I'm going to close call to audience and go to the next agenda item, which is presentations. Mr. Standish, presentation one.
Presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 22-23 quarterly financial update through June 2023.
Our finance and budget administrator, Ms. Gomez, will present this item. Welcome, Ms. Gomez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. I'm pleased to be presenting our financial update through June. So we've got another full fiscal year under our belts. These numbers are unaudited. Our auditors are coming out in a couple weeks, so we are currently preparing for that. So the numbers are subject to change and may not include any adjusting entries per our auditors that are required at year end. I'll just start off with a few things. I'm sure you all noticed our new format that we've introduced for this month. We wanted to kind of feed in a little more comprehensive data analysis. In particular, we've added comparisons to prior year actuals so we can better see trends and visibility on those trends. We've also added additional charts. So we're hoping this new format is easy to read and helpful. We welcome any feedback you may have. We are still getting used to the new format. I did want to make you aware of an oversight that I did identify on Attachment A, page 6, where you see in the chart for the general fund uses, or the graph rather, we have labels for our current year, our 22-23 actuals. Those labels are incorrect. So the chart, the numbers in the graphs, and the table are all correct. It's just those labels that had not quite been updated. So I do apologize for that, and we will be addressing that and correcting that moving forward. All right. So we'll jump right in. Just a few highlights to start. We ended the fiscal year in strong financial condition. The funds we'll be presenting on tonight, revenues outperformed our budget expectations in each of those funds. We saw strong growth in state shared revenue, particularly our shared income taxes in the general fund, but our state shared sales taxes did well too, and so did HERF. So we'll get into some of those areas in a bit. We saw expenditure savings in the general fund and community center fund. We'll cover both of those areas. Just some highlights we wanted to give you on our local sales tax. It's roughly flat to last fiscal year overall. We did budget in about an 8% decline, though. So we did exceed budget expectations overall for local sales tax. You can see some of the growth there. Restaurant and bar led the categories with close to 12% growth year over year. Utilities, we saw close to 7% growth. Our bed tax continued to do well. It grew about 3.6%. Retail, we did start seeing some slight slowdown in growth about mid-year. That was still up over last year, though, about 2.3%. Construction was our large decline, but we did anticipate that. It was down almost 20% from last year actuals, but we did budget a decline of about 24%, so it did exceed budget expectations. Okay, we'll start with the general fund. Here's the chart. You can see comparison to last year with the revenues, $55.4 million compared to $56.1 million. You may recall that last fiscal year did have $5.6 million reflected for our ARPA grant revenues, so that's a difference over the prior year. Overall, down about 1% in revenues over the last fiscal year. You can see on the uses side, $61.8 million compared to $57.5 million last year. So that's up about 7.5%. That's due to personnel, growth in personnel costs, as well as additional transfers out. So we did have a fairly large transfer to the capital fund. It's $13.5 million is what we did last fiscal year 22-23. Those increases in those areas are offset with some O&M, with variance in O&M. Our large PSPRS payment that we made is in last fiscal year. So that is that difference is offsetting some of those increases in the other areas. We budgeted to use fund balance of about $13.8 million in the general fund. Because of revenues outperforming budget, because we saw some savings and expenditures, we are expecting to use fund balance of about $6.5 million. That would bring us to a fund balance of just under $24 million, which equates to about 49% of budgeted expenditures, and that exceeds Council's 30% policy by about $9.4 million. We'll talk about the revenues in a bit more detail. You can see the actuals there in comparison to last year. We outperformed our budget in nearly every category. You can see sales taxes just about flat, down just a smidge actually over last year in the general fund in particular, but out exceeding budget expectations by about 8%. We talked about that growth in state shared revenues. You can really see that in terms of the year-over-year comparison as our city and town share of income taxes grew this fiscal year. Licenses and permits performed well. Even though we had about 119 single family residential permits issued in comparison to the budget of 171, we actually did exceed our budget number for residential permits overall. That's probably due to higher valuations as well as some of the other activity we see, you know, additions, alterations, some of that kind of ongoing stuff. Really the bulk of what drove that positive picture though for licenses and permits is the commercial side of the house. So, Our grant revenues came in about $653,000. That's primarily police grants, but we also have some transit-related grants in there as well. Intergovernmental revenues, we did see some strong growth in the revenues that we get from our IGA with the RTA for transit service. That is up over last fiscal year. Charges for services did come in slightly under budget by about 4.5%. We've talked about that previously. We had the aquatic center closed for some time for some capital improvements. We also did not collect farebox revenues this fiscal year. We had a small budget for that. So those two areas landed charges and services just a bit below budget this year. And then our other category, that is our interest income and some of our other smaller categories. We've talked about the large rebate that we received from AMRRP. That's in that number. But our interest income was quite positive this fiscal year as well, helping to drive that variance you see there compared to budget. Overall, we came in about 9% over our budget expectations for revenues in the general fund. That's about $4.6 million. We'll talk about the uses next. You can see personnel actuals were up over last fiscal year by about 11%. That's due primarily to the implementation of the class and comp study. Operations and maintenance came in about on budget, 99.4% spent for the fiscal year. Our capital, that variance you see there compared to budget, is primarily the rollover of the Westward Look project. And then you can see our transfers out. I mentioned the large transfer to the capital fund of $13.5 million, but also the debt service transfers are in that number. That variance you see there compared to budget was the fiber grant that we were not awarded. There was a budgeted transfer. I think it was about $450,000. So that transfer to the grants fund did not take place. Overall, we did come in under budget, 95.4% spent, so $61.8 million in total uses in the general fund. Moving on to the highway fund chart, I mentioned HERF growth over last fiscal year was about 3.5%, so you can see our revenues total collected $4.3 million compared to $4 million last year. Our interest earnings also did well in this fund, more so actually in our local government investment pool versus our PFM asset management firm. So those interest revenues with LGIP were strong as well. You can see on the expenditure side, we've spent $4.7 million compared to last fiscal year. You may recall we had a higher pavement preservation budget. That increase over the prior year was about $250,000. But then we also had our La Cañada Mill and Overlay project in those numbers. That was about $712,000 for the fiscal year. We did budget to use fund balance in the highway fund of just under $500,000. Due to those strong revenues and expenditures coming in about on budget, we are looking at using about $323,000 instead in fund balance. And that would land us just under $884,000 for the end of the fiscal year in the highway fund. We'll talk about the revenues a bit more. You can see there the growth for HERF over last fiscal year. Very, very close to budget. It's about $2,000 over. So that was a very precise estimate that we got from the state this fiscal year. So that was great to see. Licenses and permits are road permits that post to this fund. And then all other, that large variance you see there, that's the interest earnings. And again, very positive with our local government investment pool, but our PFM asset management firm, we saw some good returns as well. We'll talk about the expenditures briefly in the highway fund. Came in about on budget there, just a smidge over. You can see personnel came in just a bit under budget, just under $1.2 million. Operations and maintenance, this has been an area where we've seen growth with inflation, higher cost of outside services, primarily street maintenance services. So that came in just a bit over budget in that category. And then capital in the highway fund, I mentioned the pavement preservation and our La Cañada Mill and Overlay project there. So total expenditures, 4.662, ending the fiscal year in the highway fund. Moving on to the community center fund revenues, we saw strong revenue growth in nearly all categories in this fund, up overall about 6% from last fiscal year, $10.2 million compared to $9.6 million. Our uses, $15.1 million compared to $6.4 million last fiscal year. Again, just as a refresher, transfers out of this fund are about $6.6 million this year, and about $4.5 million of that is going to be to the capital fund for irrigation, for the golf course irrigation. So because of the positive revenues that we saw in this fund and the overall strong performance in the fund, that's good news that we're able to redirect that amount over there and kind of help offset those costs. We did budget to use about $4.7 million in the community center fund. Estimated use is $4.9 million. Again, directing as much as possible, bringing that fund balance down to $1 million at the end of the fiscal year per council direction. We'll talk about the revenues in a bit more detail for the community center fund. Local sales taxes came in over budget, and we also saw a bit of growth over last fiscal year. So this fund obviously does not share in any of the construction sales tax. This fund only gets the half cent off the 2.5% rate. So this fund saw growth over last year because contracting really was driving that that kind of sluggish year-over-year kind of flat outlook in the general fund. So we did see some growth here in this fund. Memberships performed strong compared to budget. You can see the budget of $1.7 million. Actuals were about $2.1 million. Charges and fees, that's our parks and rec classes. Those are our greens and cart fees, those sorts of things. Those came in significantly over budget. The recreation program revenues did well in this fund. Just about flat to last fiscal year, down just a bit. Sales, that is primarily food and beverage activity. That is merchandise that the contractor is responsible for. Actuals exceeded budget expectations. You can see $1.1 million collected compared to $817,000 as the budget. And then miscellaneous would be the interest earnings in the fund as well as our HOA contributions. Overall, community center fund revenues came in about 20% over budget, so $10.2 million collected compared to a budget of $8.5. And finally, we'll talk about the uses a bit more in the community center fund. You can see personnel there. Those actuals, that is implementation of the class and compensation study that you see there. Food and beverage activity. Actuals were just under $600,000 for costs. I did mention that we had strong activity in sales. Food and beverage sales did well. Obviously, when that occurs, your cost of sales increased too. So that is where you're seeing this variance there compared to budget. Operations and maintenance, actuals came in at $3.4 million. So that is primarily our Vistoso Preserve maintenance. That is our master plan consulting costs, as well as facility building repair and maintenance for the building. So capital, actuals were $1.5 million compared to $2.7 million for the budget. So we did have a robust CIP program in this fund. That variance you see there compared to budget is the ADA improvements primarily at the community center fund that did not occur. But also we had budgeted the Vistoso master plan as a capital project, as a CIP project. Some of those components are a study, and so those costs appropriately belong in operations and maintenance. And so that is where those are being reported. Debt service is payments on leases that occur in the fund. And then our transfers out, again, I mentioned that the large number there compared that variance compared to budget is just the additional funds that we're able to direct towards the irrigation project. In total, spending just under $15.1 million in the community center fund this fiscal year. And with that, we'd be happy to take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez, for your presentation. We'll open it to questions from council. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez, for your presentation. Regarding the estimates we receive from the League of Cities and Towns, for example, for the Highway Fund, they were incredibly accurate. But I have to note that for state shared revenues, we were off by 20%. So how do we budget for state shared revenues? Do we use their number or do we have our own?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, we use theirs for the most part. The variance you see there really was the state shared sales tax. So their number obviously was quite conservative. There may have been some potential recession impacts in that number that they were anticipating, but that was primarily the reason for the overage was our state sales tax number significantly outperformed their figure provided.
And do we recall, for fiscal year 23-24, did they provide a greatly increased number, or what did they provide us for this fiscal year that we're now in?
Sure, let me check that real quick. Give me just a minute. Bear with me. I get kicked off when I don't play with it regularly.
No problem.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so our state sales tax collections in fiscal year 22-23 were just under $7.1 million, and the budget was $5.78 million. Next fiscal year, the number provided to us is $7.2 million for a budget figure. So it did go up significantly compared to last year's budget number. And our income tax is going to grow significantly as well. But that number is usually spot on just because it's based on collections from 2 years prior.
Thank you. The next question is regarding the westward look. Wasn't aware that it was going to be delayed further. Do we have any explanation as to why it wasn't being able to finish in the previous fiscal year?
I would probably defer to Paul Kiesler, Mr. Kiesler, to provide those details.
Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, we had to value engineer, remember when I came back to council for some extra funding, and value engineer the whole project into a constrained amount, and then that value engineering had to go back to the owner of the westward look. And that took quite a bit of time to get the owner's blessing on that. But I'm happy to say we're under full construction right now.
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. And then my final questions regard the audit. And the questions might not make sense to people in this room because the details were provided yesterday by Mr. Gephardt regarding having some additional auditing capability on our golf contractor. And I submitted the questions in writing this morning, and I'm hoping that the finance staff would be ready for them. But for example, if we're going to have a greater detailed level of review of our golf contractor, are we going to be looking at actual revenues? And my questions regarded revenues from walk-up rounds, revenues from members who are members, and they go to the pro shop and they say, I'm playing around. And then also membership revenues. Are we going to have an audit of those revenue streams?
Sure. Councilmember Bowen, I'll defer to our CFO, Mr. Gephardt. He's leading the charge on those efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, for the question. Revenues are a part of our agreed-upon procedures. This is a separate engagement from our audit. Our annual financial audit with our auditors. We've also engaged them to perform an agreed-upon procedures engagement on our behalf, just specifically looking at golf. And they will be, as part of their procedures, they've been directed to evaluate and look at the internal controls, have an understanding of the controls in place by our contractor, test those controls, and then also look at test transactions related to the revenue process, looking at the point of sale data, tracing that to the monthly, the summarized monthly monthly income reports, and then also looking at deposits into the bank account and making sure that there's supporting documentation, and also looking at receipts. There's supporting documentation for those transactions. So that work will be taking place.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. And then the final question was on the expense side. Will there be an evaluation of the payment that's made to the golf contractor at the end of the year for reasonableness?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, yes. They are looking at the expenditure side as well. We're having them perform a Benford's Law analysis, looking at detailed transactions, as well as looking at the incentive fee, making sure that that's in line with the contract, that it's calculated appropriately, and then testing transactions as well. So yes, kind of a very deep dive, both looking high level at the controls and the systems in place, but also looking at, on a test basis, individual transactions and how all that fits together and is computed, and making sure that it's in line with our contract with the contractor.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. Ms. Gomez, those are my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Other questions for Ms. Gomez this evening? Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. I appreciate this change to actuals compared to budget. One thing that I value in it is we have projects like the Westward Look or otherwise that get rolled over from one year to the other. And when we compare budget to budget, it feels like those appear several times, even though the money's only spent once. And so by looking at the actuals, we can see when that money's actually spent. But is there any way that we can still see or compare the budget compared to the budget, in case that would be useful as well?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, sure, we can take a look at that. I will admit it's a bit of a struggle with spacing already to include what we have here, but we can work with that. I definitely see the value in it. So let us work within what we've got, and we'll see if we can't fit that in.
Okay, thank you. It's not the end of the world. I like the actuals comparison better when given the choice, but just we're used to seeing the budget to budget, so it's just a little bit different. Regarding, you mentioned that the ADA improvements at the community center did not occur in this budget year that they were budgeted for. Is there an update regarding the timeline of when we would expect those to occur? I'm assuming they'll be occurring this fiscal year.
Yes, I'm going to defer to our Public Works Director to address that project. He is managing that.
Mayor, Vice Mayor. Yeah, so our design completed a little bit ago, and we are in permitting right now. So as soon as we have the permit in hand, we're going to go out for bid. It's roughly about 2 weeks or so, and bid evaluation for a week. Then we have award and contract. So I think we're going to be able to start construction anywhere from a month and a half to 2 months from now.
Okay, thank you. And that construction will be lowering, doing the building and the elevator, right?
The full boat.
The full thing as part of that one project?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your presentation, and I like the new format. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome.
Yeah. Other questions, comments? Thank you, Ms. Gomez. We really appreciate all that you do.
You're welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Standish, presentation two.
Presentation and possible discussion regarding the Pima Connect Middle Mile Fiber Project.
We have Deputy Director for the Pima County Public Library, Ms. Michelle Simon, will present this item. And if you'd like to introduce your colleague.
Absolutely. I'd also like to say that as the Deputy Director of the Pima County Public Library, I've also been newly appointed to the Office of Digital Inclusion for Pima County. I will be their director towards the end of this year.
Congratulations.
Go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, members of the Council. My name is Javier Baca. I am the IT Director for Pima County, and I'm very pleased to be here to share share our Connect PMA initiative and the Middle Mile Grant. So I'll let Ms. Director Simon initiate the presentation and step in.
Thank you. Oh,
there
Thank
it
you.
Is. Look at that. How pretty is that? All right. So we're here today to really thank all of you for your efforts in the Connect PMA initiative. Connect PMA is a task force that was put together in August of 2021 by Pima County, and Oro Valley has been participating in that effort since its inception. And the focus of our task force is to promote digital inclusion throughout Pima County. And we're doing that in three different ways, by focusing on the building of broadband infrastructure, focusing on digital literacy initiatives, and then making sure that individuals in our community have access to the devices and tools that they need. That's why the library is such an integral part of this effort, and why our IT program and the help of Mr. Baca here is important to us moving forward in helping our communities. This information here, the reason that we bring up the detailed information from NTIA and from the Federal Communications Commission is because of the sheer amount of money that the feds are putting forward in the bipartisan infrastructure law. You may be aware that Arizona received almost $1 billion in BEAD funding allocation, and they are currently working through the process to determine how our communities will receive that additional funding. You're more than welcome to dig into the link at your own leisure that says Household Poverty and Internet Access by Block Group. So we have a data dashboard that includes information for the entirety of Pima County as to who needs internet access. And when we're talking about internet access, we are talking about 100 megabit speed download and 25 megabit speed upload. You will find that when looking at the maps and the information in that dashboard, that there are many portions of our community that do not have that speed. My house is one of them. And so Pima County has unique issues. Not only do we have areas of low income and low adoption rates for internet, but we also have geographic and geographic issues where some of our neighborhoods are unable to get reliable internet speeds because of a mountain being in their backyard. Okay, so we're looking at how we can address all of those things throughout Pima County. There we go. And so our digital inclusion efforts really start with making sure that we have affordable, robust broadband internet service, and that we're making sure that in our community that every end user has an internet-enabled device. Many of our students are trying to do homework on their telephones, right? Or they don't understand how to use a desktop computer when they get into the workplace. So these are all things that the Office of Digital Inclusion and Connect PMA, as our digital infrastructure and inclusion plan, focuses on. Okay. Also providing access to digital literacy training and quality technical support. We work with community helping organizations as well as the state library to implement digital navigator assistance in technical support so people can get assistance in filling out an affordable connectivity program subsidy for internet, or they can learn how to download an ebook to their device at home. So we do all of that kind of stuff, not only in person, but through the telephone, and the state library is a large part of that particular effort. Let's see, did it move? There it goes. So basically, the digital divide is the issue. We're working on digital equity as the goal, and digital inclusion is our work.
Go ahead. Thank you. So, as Director Simon mentioned, Connect PMA, that's the initiative, the foundation of the work that not only have this Pima County, City of Tucson, Town of Oro Valley, Marana, many other partnerships. And if it weren't for those partnerships, we wouldn't have been able to achieve being awarded this $30 million grant now. So this $30 million grant will enable the county to construct a 134-mile ring, fiber ring, surrounding the urban core of Tucson, and a large section of it passes through the town of Oro Valley. So we're here to just continue to raise your, you know, inform you, give you an update, but also continue to raise the awareness among yourselves and among your community, your constituents, so that they see how this middle mile ring will ultimately benefit the residents of Oro Valley as well as the entirety of Pima County. It's a 5-year grant. So it sounds like there's plenty of time to construct it, but as you are well aware, that is not really going to be sufficient time to get. We need to get started on this now. So we're actively doing that. We have many parts of this that require partnership, and if it weren't for the partnership of Oro Valley, we wouldn't have been awarded the grant. So we're here to ask for your continued partnership. And partnership, what does that mean? Now, there's a $13 million in-kind contribution required of the grant, and much of that is partially county-funded, but we're also can also include aspects that if Oro Valley continues to serve in a partnership way and consider such opportunities as a waiver of certain fees, licenses and fees that are going to be required to enable the construction of down, say, Tangerine and down other main areas of the ring, and also some type of continued partnership in terms of work with resources. So if we identify that there's a need to collaborate and ask for your time and ask for your resources to be made available so that we can discuss the issues, maybe initiate certain conversations with the community so that your constituents can understand how is this going to impact me as a resident. These are the kind of partnerships that we're asking for your continued support along. We're not here to ask for funds, but we're here to ask for partnership, and through those partnerships, we can continue to make this be a successful project. And so that's what our hope is, to raise that awareness. It got started on July 1st. The key first obstacle we have to overcome is an environmental assessment. And the rich history of this area of Pima County makes it more complicated than the typical. I think they're saying that they've never seen such a complicated environmental assessment that's going to happen as in any other part of the country. But that's okay. We have a lot of resources to bring to bear to help us overcome those things, just the historical and the cultural artifacts that we will be crossing throughout the entirety of the ring. So we have to start with initiating some requests for proposals for that environmental assessment, including a design build construction contractor, and then ultimately a operations, maintenance, and commercialization. So what I want to emphasize is the commercialization side of that, and that's where things really start to be beneficial to the entirety of Pima County. By this grant, we're going to internet service providers will no longer have to upfront the costs to get into areas that were prohibitive in the past. It was prohibitive in many of the for them to invest the capital costs to build infrastructure so that affordable internet service could be provided in those areas. Well, we're doing that. This grant is going to allow us to do that. Once we complete this installation, now a market of a competitive market is going to be available, where internet service provider can lease the fibers that are going to be available, and they no longer have to close that middle mile. They only have to close the last mile. And closing the last mile is a much more affordable proposition. And now that we have competition, we're going to see, as we've seen proven time and time again, when we've seen other municipalities who've invested in competitive environments such as this, that there's the downward pressure that's in favor of the consumers. And what is traditionally, you know, a $50 to $100 monthly service fee magically starts to drop down into that more affordable $30 to $50 range that is more competitive and more based off of what the market says is typical. So that's what we're hoping for. This is a net win for really everyone involved, because not only does it benefit consumers for more affordable internet access, but it's going to benefit remote workers. It's going to create economic development opportunities throughout all of these areas that the ring crosses through. So we're very excited about this, and we're here to just ask for your continued partnership, and thank you for the partnership that you that the town of Oro Valley has committed to this project so that we could get to this point. Anything else you want to add, Michelle? Oh, sorry. Here's the ring. I want to let you take a look at the ring. Through your staff's input, we've made some slight modifications to the ring. Just to make sure that we're avoiding any private land, And this ring is fully available. If you go to pima.gov/connect-pima, on that page, the lower right side of that page, you'll see this exact map. And that's going to be an area that we're going to continue to grow the resources in that as this grant continues to move forward. There are going to be some slight modifications possibly to this ring, nothing major, but just so that we can avoid any areas of complexity crossing through some of the sovereign nation lands and other areas. It might just a slight move around that will speed up the project, but ultimately it's still going to provide those internet connectivity options for those underserved areas as well. I guess I'll give it a pause to maybe ask for any questions, and Michelle, if you want to add any other comments.
No, I think you covered it quite well. I think it's real important for all of us to understand that this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. The amount of money that the federal government is putting towards this effort is vitally important to Pima County. The state of Arizona is currently working on a digital equity plan, and they are working on how to allocate the funds that they receive for BEAD funding. And Pima County, through the establishment of the strategic plan, which is Connect Pima, is kind of ahead of the game, right? In that aspect, because our strategic plan is mirroring what should be in the state's strategic broadband plan, as well as the digital equity plan, and as well as the best practices from a nationwide perspective. And I can't reiterate enough how much help the Oro Valley staff has been in helping us to identify the best path, or even talking about how collaborative we can be through this effort. So we will have some more details as we're moving forward. Like Javier said, we are currently in the nascent stages of procurement, but we will be asking to do community listening sessions and engaging with your various areas of the town so that we can get input from all of the members and make sure that we're addressing everyone's concerns.
Thank you. Can we open it to questions?
Please, thank you.
Council, questions?
Yeah.
Council Member Jones Ivey? Okay.
And looking at the 134-mile fiber ring, do we know just what the population count is within that ring and who is outside of it that will not have service?
So, if I may?
Yeah, please.
So, we don't want to let this don't feel that this what's inside the ring is really what's being served. Really, it's what's outside of the ring is what's going to be served. Anywhere within a 25-mile distance from the ring is where we're expecting internet service to be able to provide. So if you can draw a 25-mile line from any part of this ring outward, upward, down a radius from that spot, there's going to be more opportunity to provide services. So in many areas of our community, there's only one service provider that can provide it. Sometimes that's Lumen or CenturyLink. Other times there's the Comcast and the other cable providers. And sometimes there's only one of them available just because of the agreements that were established in those areas. What's going to happen now is they're going to be able to lease the fiber from this ring and close those middle mile distances from it within a 25-mile range. So truly, the entirety of coverage is beyond even what's pictured on this screen. 25 miles to the east, 25 miles to the west, north and south of these rings is where residents are going to benefit from it. So when you ask about the population served, it truly is the entirety of the Tucson population, because the competitiveness will actually reach into the urban city as well. But because we're going into these rural areas, those are the areas that were historically wasn't affordable for the internet service providers to build infrastructure out to there. And now we're going to provide that to them, and then we're going to lease those fibers to them. And this is not a profit enterprise. The county is not going to be making money. We're just going to operate at cost. We're going to make sure that we're able to maintain and support and continue to ongoing support this, commercialize it. But it's going to be leased to them at a very affordable rate so that they don't have a large upfront cost. I hope that answers the question.
Yes, thank you.
Councilmember Nicholson, then Councilmember Green, then Councilmember Solomon, and Vice Mayor, and Councilmember Bowen, did you have your hand?
I did.
Okay, well, we'll In that order, Nicholson, Green, Solomon, Barrett, then Bowen.
How many years is this supposed to get? Does it need to get done before end of 2025? Is that the time frame?
It is a five-year grant. The end is June 30th of 2028. If necessary, we do have the option for an extension for 1 year beyond that. Okay, but the goal is 2028.
Okay, Councilmember Green.
This is probably a neophyte question for sure, but what are you planning to do in terms of improving user competence? What are those programs going to look like?
Oh, that's a lovely question. Thank you. So digital literacy is one of the main tenets of what this strategic plan is about. And that is engaging our community, helping organizations, our municipalities, our libraries to implement and get back to the time before COVID when there were lots of computer classes in our community, and being able to help people who struggle with that technology, but also we have the resources to help individuals who don't struggle with that technology and help and can help us move it up. Exactly. We're looking at ways to upskill. Director Bacher and I were just having a conversation about the efforts putting forward related to cybersecurity and how Pima College has efforts and how they're doing, the federal government is giving scholarships for education related to cybersecurity. This all plays a role in what Connect Pima does.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Solomon.
The way I solve that problem as far as computer literacy or smartphone literacy, I find the nearest grade school child I can and hand them my device and say, can you fix this for me?
It's true. And that happens.
They
that
usually happens. Do. My question for you is, yes, I agree. There's a lot of areas that are not served particularly by Comcast and the other cable networks. For example, like you're showing here, Tangerine Road. Comcast will not go into unpaved road areas. Okay, we put this loop in. Now, what's going to be the incentive for Comcast to now go several miles or let alone 20 miles onto dirt roads to provide the service, even if that loop is there?
So I guess let me understand the question. What's going to be the incentive for Comcast to do that? I think it's competition among its fellow providers. So they're going to have a much now. Comcast already has infrastructure into those areas, or other providers. They already have infrastructure, so they have a little bit of a leg up. We're leveling the playing field for competition among other internet service providers. So other internet providers such as Simply Bits, or now known as Ting, I could just list a name. Even some of the cellular providers will get into the market here. And because they see that cost to get into the neighborhoods is much lower. It's prohibitive right now. It wouldn't be a profitable enterprise for them to construct their fiber out into these individuals. So we're going to be constructing that fiber middle mile, and then now there's a competition. So now, to your point, Comcast is going to be seeing that while these other internet providers are getting into the market, I better figure out how I can make it beneficial to get into those areas as well.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. Next question is, with the Starlink satellite systems and potentially others, is this going backwards? Buried cables? Are we, is this something to invest hundreds of billions of dollars in throughout the country when this may be completely obsolete in a few years?
That is a very fair question. However, what I can say, and this is based off of my 20 years of experience as a CIO, fiber infrastructure, there's so much bandwidth available in fiber that it's still not at the same level as available through wireless technologies. Now, wireless technologies can penetrate and they can get into areas that it's difficult to get into, but you're not going to be able to deliver the same level of bandwidth. And bandwidth is always going to be a growing resource and a growing need. So fiber, it's not unlimited, but there's an incredible amount more flexibility. So it's a combination of both. It's not one or the other. Fiber is a smart investment. It is an investment that is going to sustain us through, the next 20 to 30 years, because every year the fiber technologies are developing, continue to develop. So across these 492 strands of fiber, so that's how many strands of fiber are going to be surrounding on this, 492 individual strands, and those are just going to be divided up among the internet service providers and government agencies. Across those fiber ring, each of those fiber strands, in the next 5 to 10 years, you'll see sometimes it's a doubling of the amount of bandwidth can be supported on one single fiber. So that continues to grow and grow and grow. Now, you're absolutely right. But what we did see during, especially during the pandemic, is the promises of wireless technology didn't really materialize. There were a lot of hopes and a lot of expectations that, oh, well, we have this wireless infrastructure. Can that solve the connectivity issues that exist? And the problem with wireless connectivity is that in a small area, you can have coverage, but getting past just a few hundred yards, that the signal drops to a point, and it can't penetrate into buildings very significantly. So through this, we're able to just get so much closer to each residence, and now the wireless technology can penetrate. Or we can actually deliver fiber to the home. Fiber to the home is a very viable technology that most municipalities are investing in. Mesa just closed a deal with fiber to the home, and so now they're actually delivering a fiber connection directly to the home. And once you have fiber, you don't have you have a very reliable network connectivity at that point. So it's a combination of both. But that is an excellent question.
Thank you,
Vice Mayor.
Yes, thank you. So do you have a map of underserved areas by any
yes,
chance?
So in that PowerPoint presentation, that link I told you about that says household and internet poverty, if you click on that link, it will show you a dashboard. I don't know if it'll do it. It won't do it for us here. Yeah. It will show you a dashboard that has a map of the entirety of Pima County and lays out municipality borders and district borders and anchor institutions and everything about served, underserved. There you go.
Thank you.
Okay.
What great
and
service we're
so all that. Of this information, if you look on the left-hand side of the screen, it tells you where we get this information from. It is from the American Community Survey as well as FCC Maps. It goes down into the block group. So if you click on a block group, what ends up happening is down at the bottom of the screen, it will give you demographic information about that block group. And it also hovers over the block group and will tell you how many households within the block group do not have internet access in their home. Okay. And if on the bottom right-hand side, you see the diamond shape, all right, the darker the color, the more poverty and the less internet. The bluer the color, the more, it says more poverty, but they have more internet, right? So you'll find all of these spots. And the things to point out is people will always say, well, Tucson's covered. City of Tucson has lots of internet. But if you make that map really wide, you'll see little spots where there is not internet access for people. And the infrastructure might be missing or the adoption rates are low. So back to the questions related to digital literacy, people not connecting to the internet because either they can't afford it or they don't know how to use it, okay? And so these are the reasons that Connect Pima is focusing on all three things.
Okay, thanks. Would it be possible to zoom into Oro Valley a little bit more so we can...
Don't put your fingers on there.
Sorry, it's a little tricky. I'm just curious if we can see how that's impacting our area within that loop.
Yeah. So it's real important where it says middle mile infrastructure.
You can click that box in the upper right.
You can click that for me.
Yeah.
Okay. But also drop it down because the purple dots, just for your information, are community anchor institutions. Go ahead and unclick that one. And then, so you see the fiber optic ring, it's the black line. But this also will show you that 25-mile buffer. If you can click the box that says fiber optic ring buffer, you'd have to zoom back out to see all 25 miles around it. But you will see that the coverage is well within the ring, but also goes well into Pinal County for as far as it can reach.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're a little further north, right?
You're down at the top of
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. If you could scroll down a little bit, because then, yeah, we're... Actually,
nope.
Other direction. Sorry.
Go up. Sorry.
Sprint up.
Yeah.
Up. Sorry. There we go.
Okay.
There we are.
Right there where it says District 1. And unclick the buffer box. Yep.
There we go.
There you go.
Okay, so is this map showing that, relatively speaking, our citizens have good connectivity to internet?
We need to scroll down here so I can see the legend. On the side, on the right-hand side.
The little scroll bar right
there. Yeah,
there
you go. Okay, so it says less poverty and more internet access. So, yes, you do. But you also have significant areas that have less internet. So those orange colors have less internet as well.
Okay, thank you. I feel like that's helpful for us to get a little bit of a picture of what's going on in our area. Thank you.
So you'll notice the ring itself. You see those orange spots in Oro Valley? The ring goes right through it and goes around it. And that's the point. The reason for the ring and the weird shape that it's in right now is we were trying to identify those areas where there are going to be the most unserved or underserved homes. So remember, we're in the process of contesting FCC maps right now because of BEAD funding. And related to the grants, you're served if you have above 100 megabytes download, 25 megabits upload. The minute you're below that, you're in the underserved category, okay? And then you're unserved if you're below 25.3. Well, many of these areas, if a provider can say that they have one household that gets 100 megabytes and 25, that area is served. So this is the reason that we are contesting maps at this point.
Yeah, it's a little misleading to say that, that all these areas are very well served. And that goes to my competition comment in the past earlier. There's really probably one provider, and yes, they do have 100 megabits, 25 megabits up and down, and so they can call that little block served. But there's no competition, and the prices that are being paid are really not what the competitive market would call for. So the moment there's competition in that marketplace, you'll see everyone benefit. You'll see the prices come down, and you'll see more opportunities, and you'll see the speeds theoretically go up as well, because that competition is going to provide an upward force on the speed offerings that they offer. We've seen it happen, play again. I mean, when these communities like in Mesa, the moment the competition competitive environment develops, all of a sudden those prices go in favor of the consumers. So it's a net win in that way.
Okay, one more question. You mentioned that these lines will be leased by internet service providers, and I know internet service providers are very interested in that. But will some of that lease go to pay back the significant public investment that's being put into this? And if so, what mechanism would that be with?
Well, you know, it's not going to pay back this is a federal grant, and it's intended to create this opportunity. The lease is going to go towards operating the environment. So there's going to be an ongoing maintenance cost associated with this. There's an administrative cost of contracting and awarding the contracts. There's nothing embedded in the grant that's going to say, well, of the $40 million grants that are expended, that's going to be paid back by these leases. That's not the design of it. And that's not designed even by the nature of the grant itself. The grant isn't meant to create a revenue source that pays that. It's to build an infrastructure that just... There isn't an environment that supported those infrastructure to get placed in the first place. So I suppose the answer is a no to exactly what you're asking, that we're not going to be collecting additional funds to pay back this. There's no debt involved in this. It's a grant. We're going to construct this with the grant, and then we're going to create this environment for the community to benefit.
Okay. Well, it's a $30 million grant and then $13 million additional investment, right? So there's no opportunity with the leases to offset any of that, basically.
No, not the way it's designed, no.
Thanks.
Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you for your presentation. We're in a room right now with quite acceptable download speeds and upload speeds. Are there benefits to those of us that are fortunate enough to live inside the ring right now for having this extra infrastructure? Because we know over the years, our download needs just grow and grow and grow. So does this also have the benefit of helping people, not just with costs, but also in getting greater download speeds than we can get right now?
That competitive environment has been proven to be a successful model by which not only do costs go down, but that competition also creates an incentive to increase the speed offerings. And maybe that's another, if we have opportunity to come, there's some data that supports that statement. So In a future meeting that we have an opportunity to discuss, we can bring some of that information about how does that create the environment that you're, you know. So you're going to benefit. Ultimately, everyone is going to benefit from this. It's just by the free market competition that gets engendered through the grant.
Thank you. And I think I also heard, and it's very encouraging to know that your organizations and our staff are already working together on some of the details, like where this would be actually routed and some of the long-term issues. And I'm very grateful for that.
Yes.
I'd also like to know, if it's not too soon to ask, you seem to imply, you know, we're working together at a certain level, but we'd like to work together at a greater level. You know, what are some of the future requests that you might be making to our town to help complete this, so that we can know for our upcoming budget, you know, what this is all about, and we're not asking about it then, but we're trying to learn about it beforehand proactively?
Very fair question. You know, it's difficult to say, to put a finger on exactly what we need at this point, but what we do know is that there's going to be, you know, potentially an issue crossing an area, so we may need to have access to your staff to be able to decide what is the best route to go through, and ask for just a commitment that you know there's always going to be that partnership of availability, and that this partnership is for the greater good of the middle mile infrastructure grant and the greater good of the entirety of Pima County, and it will benefit Oro Valley. So it's difficult for me to say specifically, like, we need, but this is a 5-year project, and over the course of 5 years, we can just imagine that there's going to be opportunities where, you know what, it'd be great to call up Oro Valley and see if they can assist in overcoming this bureaucratic obstacle, or writing a letter of support. You know, the things that just help pave the way towards overcoming the inevitable obstacles of constructing something as complex as this. So I know it's vague, but I mean, we can't really put a exact description on it right now.
Well, I would add that the description that he just gave, those are counted as in-kind contributions to the grant. So tracking that time and effort is extremely important through that. So if you had any staff that helped us in that way, tracking that time and effort and putting a dollar amount on it now goes as part of that in-kind contribution for the $13 million.
Your answer might have been vague, but it's also informative. It helps us to learn how you see this evolving as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Those are my questions.
Was the match, was that, there was a match requirement for this grant application. Was there a minimum match requirement? Exceed that?
The minimum match is 30%, which is that $13 million, and it can be a combination of cash and in-kind contributions.
It seems like the 13 is closer to 40%.
The grant project itself is like a $43.3 million grant.
Yeah.
And the exact number is just under $13 million. So when you put it together, the feds are paying 70% and we're paying 30%.
So it was, you needed to identify that match as part of the application. Mm-hmm. So there must have been some pre-commitment for that match.
Can you? Oro Valley did provide a letter of support and pre-commitment to that. And at that time, which was more than 18 months ago, that cash match was $200,000 and then in-kind contributions. Now, 2 years later, I don't know that that is the same commitment you have. That is the commitment that was put forward in the letter of support. We can have the discussions. We can figure all of that out. Pima County, when we came together and when we asked all of the municipalities to come with us to do one application for Pima County made the commitment to take care of what needed to be taken care of.
Okay.
And so any kind of support that you're able to provide when it comes that time, we're going to be very appreciative.
So in determining the match, I mean, there's X linear miles of this. And so there's some subset of that that's going through Oro Valley.
Yes.
So you could determine this would be a fair match in some ways based on,
if you wanted to do it a straightforward calculation like that. I will tell you the way that the grant is written, it's more activity-based versus it being by linear feet. So permitting, establishment of rights of way, things that we might have to pay your planning and zoning for doing that. Swapping of fiber assets, okay, those kinds of things. They're all things that will be in the future that we can discuss, because you might say, look, we got fiber right there where you say you're going. Let's swap, because we want to have some fiber over here. And those are ways that we can account for in-kind contributions.
And because it's in-kind, it isn't necessarily cash.
That's correct.
And but you still have to build the project, and that's going to require, so that's all been, I mean, determined. I mean, the $30 million, whatever it is, $35 million, mm-hmm. you need some hard cash to pay to get the cable in the ground. Mm-hmm. That in-kind doesn't get you there.
And, correct.
And, yeah.
So the difference is Pima County is making sure that cash exists. It's reserved. Mm-hmm. It's set aside. We wouldn't have been able to proceed with the grant if we didn't provide those commitments. But just so that, you know, in the interest of however we want to, you know, that $200,000, whether that's through in-kind reduced costs of permitting or time and labor that's associated with, you know, any staff that works towards this project, all those things can be calculated up. And then we can do, this is a five-year project, so you know, we're here to just raise awareness and let you know that this is a good opportunity for the county, and we hope that that continued partnership can we come to you in the future and can rely on that continued partnership.
I think absolutely. Councilmember Solomon?
Yes, it's my understanding that our public works director has become quite adept at using the town's backhoe equipment. Perhaps we could volunteer him on weekends to do trenching towards our in-kind contribution.
We'll make sure the contractor is well aware of his ability.
Well, we appreciate very much Pima County taking the lead on this. This is really kudos to you and to the county as a whole to have secured this grant. So thank you very much, and we appreciate the time you've spent with us this evening helping to raise our awareness. Yeah. So thank you.
We're very excited about it, and thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go to consent agenda. Councilmember Bowen has requested that item C be pulled from the consent agenda. I move to approve items A and B of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Councilmember Bowen, item C of the consent agenda.
And thank you, Mr. Abraham, for being available to answer a couple questions about this firming agreement with the Arizona Water Bank. The first question that I have is, do we have an agreement in place, or would this be the first time we've had this type of agreement?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, we do not have an agreement in place. That's what this IGA is about, to create that agreement.
And is this... this agreement basically is enabling us to access banked water that we've been banking for many, many years, correct?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's correct. Since 1996, the state of Arizona has been banking, which at the time that such a thing existed as excess Colorado River water, the state has banked over 4 million acre feet in aquifer storage facilities throughout Arizona, more specifically over 600,000 acre feet in our aquifer area. Until recently, there hasn't been a need to utilize that source of supply, but we may be at some future point need to access those supplies. So the Arizona Water Bank created this IGA for municipalities like Oro Valley as the means and methods to have access to that water if that time comes that we need it.
Thank you. And is the NERD system needed to physically deliver this water, or could this water be delivered today?
This water could be delivered today through our wheeling agreement with the city of Tucson, but we're only limited as to how much we could receive. Right now, our wheeling agreement only allows us to receive up to 2,600 acre feet just because of the limitations of the Tucson water system. So the NERDS project would allow us to receive up to an additional 4,000 acre feet a year.
So NERDS helps us to get these deposits of banked water in that we wouldn't have to pay wheeling fees. to Tucson, and also we could increase the capacity, the amount that we withdraw every year.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's correct. In addition to giving us redundancy in our water system and how we access our sources of supply.
Okay, and I really appreciate your coming to answer these questions. I think water is just so important that we should always take the chance to educate ourselves as to the details of what we're doing. So, and Mr. Mayor, those are my questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Member Bowen. Any additional questions? I move to approve item C of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. There are no regular agenda items. Any future agenda items?
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, I'd like to add an agenda item to the next meeting on October 4th, discussion and possible action regarding the HOA contributions to golf through the Community Center Fund.
I don't believe so, but you can second it.
I would second that.
Okay. Thank you. Other agenda items? I move to adjourn.
Second. Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Good night, everyone.